Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Everything Iconic with me, Danny Pellegrino. I hope you're all having a wonderful holiday weekend. Today's show's a little bit different. We have a star on the show, Joel Kim Booster. Now, Joel Kim Booster wrote and stars in a movie called Fire Island, which is hitting Hulu this Friday, June 3rd. Again, Friday, June 3rd. He's also a stand-up comedian with a new stand-up special on Netflix, June 21st, called Psychosexual. He's hilarious, wonderful, fantastic, talented. Again, a huge star. And this movie, Fire Island, I got a chance to see it early. It's so fantastic. It's a modern-day rom-com, which is inspired by Pride and Prejudice. It's so fantastic. Now, it stars Joel Kim Booster and Bowen Yang. Also, a lot of other great comedians in there. Matt Rogers, who's been on Everything Iconic before. Margaret Cho. There's so many wonderful people in this. It's very LGBTQ+ friendly. I think everyone in the cast is LGBTQ+ in real life, which is fantastic. And it's nice to just see a gay rom-com. I can't recommend this movie enough. You're going to love it when you see it on June 3rd on Hulu. And I can't wait for you all to hear my chat with Joel Kim Booster. We talk about his stand-up special. We talk about the movie. And we talk about Housewives, because we got to talk about Housewives. Joel's a Housewives watcher, so we get into all the nitty-gritty of the Bravo world. So please enjoy my chat with Joel Kim Booster. We'll be back later this week with the recap. We have Dubai coming this week, the Real Housewives of Dubai. And also we have Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. So stay tuned to Everything Iconic. Find me on social media at Danny Pellegrino. Make sure to subscribe or follow wherever you listen to the podcast. You can get my book wherever books are sold. It's called How Do I Unremember This? And without further ado, please enjoy my chat with Joel Kim Booster. Joel, how are you today?
I'm doing so good. And I have to say, I'm like, I was telling you before, I've been doing so much press. And then to see that you are the final one today was such, oh, it was such a relief. I'm just so excited. I'm such a huge fan. So this is really exciting for me.
And vice versa too. And I just have to gush over the movie, which I'm sure as you've been talking to people, it was so good. And it was heartwarming and beautiful and funny, and it was just all of the most wonderful of things. So I do want to talk a little bit about that first. Talk to me about the transition, because you initially developed it for Quibi, right?
Yeah.
So how did we go from like a Quibi thing? Because when we all think of the Quibi thing, we think, oh, that's going to be like kind of a crappier project, to this beautiful, stunning, amazing film that was so good.
Well, I got to say, like, you know, say what you will about Quibi, but they did have pretty good taste. I mean, they were pouring money into some, you know, it was me and Reese Witherspoon. So, you know, sure. Like they had some good taste. And I'll say the other thing is that like the appeal of Quibi, I think for a lot of creators, was that you would get it all back in 2 years and could sell it however you wanted. And so when I wrote it for Quibi, I always wrote it structurally as though I were writing a screenplay, and then I just sort of chopped it into 10 chapters for Quibi. And so when Quibi folded, you know, it was really easy for me to just go into Final Draft and like sort of take out the chapter breaks and just send it out as a screenplay. And structurally, you know, there were things that I cut. I think like Quibi wanted a much broader comedy, and I do think the film is very funny, but there were things that they wanted me to sacrifice, I think, some of the heart for comedy in some places. And so that's really sort of the major change that happened with the switchover. But structurally, the story as it stands, it was largely the same from Quibi to Searchlight. That we didn't make a ton of huge changes. I think there's maybe a song choice that someone sings in the movie that is a new addition for Searchlight that they, you know, I think really allowed me to play a little bit more and be a little gayer. And so I'm deeply thankful for that.
Wait, can you tell me what the song choice was initially?
It was going to be, Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow, which is so morose compared to what it ends up being in the film. So
are you talking about the last song, right?
I'm talking about the karaoke moment.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I love the music choices. I mean, I really just thought it was so beautiful. And it's interesting. I was just watching that Heartstopper show. Have you seen that on Netflix?
I have seen bits and pieces of it. I haven't been able to sit down and watch it.
There's like this one scene where the kid, he's like a closeted kid sort of coming to terms with his sexuality throughout this series. And he goes and searches on his phone, like LGBTQ movies. And I had sort of an aha moment or epiphany moment because the same sort of 10 movies come up. It's But I'm a Cheerleader. I mean, since the 90s, I think oftentimes people think we've come so far and we have made a ton of strides. But if you Google LGBTQ movies, there's still a small handful from the 90s and the early 2000s. And it's not
certainly mainstream ones. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm sure you've seen all the like TLA Wolf Studio released like gay. I remember in high school when I worked at a video rental store, I was watching all those movies like Eating Out, Big Eden, Mambo Italiano,
Trick,
Adam and Steve, Trick, like all those movies were really, they walked so that Fire Island could run. Like they were such huge influences on me when I was growing up.
That's right. I was just going
so
to ask, like,
access
of those LGBTQ movies. Like, did you have a favorite? Because I remember even, was Broken Hearts Club. It was sort of a gay rom-com with Dean Cain of all people.
Yeah, it was mostly straight. Yeah.
All straight.
My favorite one from that era, I mean, is so sad. It's probably a tie between Latter Days,
if you
remember that. And Mambo Italiano is Gay My Big Fat Greek Wedding, but with Italian people. And it's so fun and good. And if people can find it, I don't know. That's the problem, is that like when you Google gay movies, like the big mainstream ones come up, but they're so hard to find these other ones, these like smaller indie ones that were, you know, they had their problems, but they were all really, really special too. And I, you know, I tip my hat to all those creators for getting them made when they did.
I mean, we are, our sort of generation had to seek those out and try to find them wherever we could, because it was like the only gay stuff we could see. And not only that, but one of the things that I think is so special about Fire Island is it doesn't desexualize the gay experience, because sometimes, especially with those mainstream things, we take out all of the sexuality to make it a little bit more palatable to a wider straight audience or something. Yeah. But I think we need to show them the sex stuff so that people can be more comfortable.
And shout out to our two intimacy coordinators on set, two dynamite Australian women, straight women, who I had to tell you, like, I was shocked every time I saw a sex scene in Fire Island, because they got the angles in a way a lot of television and movies do not understand the angles in which we have to have sex. And it's science fiction sometimes when I see gay sex depicted on screen.
Right. Tell people a little bit about what the movie is. It's based on Pride and Prejudice, right?
Yeah, it's basically what Amy Heckerling did with Emma and Clueless is sort of what I was trying to do with Pride and Prejudice in Fire Island. It's a loose modern retelling that hits a lot of the same beats, and it has a lot of the same characters. It is structured around this chosen family that is a stand-in for the Bennets, and they go to Fire Island. And it really is, I think the big adjustment that I made is Pride and Prejudice is you know, really about the romance between that the sisters have with Mr. Bingley and Mr. Darcy, especially. And in my movie, those romances exist in their own ways, but I do think it is so much more about the relationship between Bowen and I and the friendship that we have. And it is sort of, as much as it's a rom-com, a traditional rom-com, I do think it is, it's almost so a romance between these two friends too, who are, you know, going to the island to have fun and possibly have sex and just lose themselves a little bit in a world away from straight people.
Talk to me about working with Margaret Cho. Obviously I love Margaret Cho, and I saw you were tweeting about, she had said what a delight it was to work on this movie and how amazingly talented you are and all of that kind of stuff. But I mean, that must be incredible to hear, because Margaret Cho
is beyond. I mean, I can draw a straight line from All American Girl to Fire Island, because Margaret really did change my life. She changed my conception of what was possible and what I could do as an Asian American person in this industry. I mean, I was probably like 8 or 9 when All American Girl came out, and I just remember sitting like inches away from the TV and feeling like for the first time I was seeing myself, and it wasn't Jackie Chan. you know, like it wasn't an action movie. It was just like a family, and it was a people like me, and finding out that like Margaret made that. I mean, it was just, it blew my world wide open. And, you know, for me to get to work with her on this movie and to cast her in this movie, I mean, she wasn't, that part was originally written for an older gay man. And, you know, she came in sort of late in the game, and it just was such an amazing full circle moment to have her on set. Cause she's incredible. She's everything you want her to be.
It looked really fun. Like I just was watching, I was like, oh, I want to hang out there with all of those people. It was just I auditioned for it too. So there was some alternative universe where that would have happened, but I'm glad everyone who was in the film were much better than I would have been. But talk to me about casting queer people, because there's sort of this argument all the time, right? When straight people play gay roles, whether or not that's okay, where do we stand on that? And I'm just curious what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, I mean, so my thing is that I don't, on paper, I don't have a problem morally with straight people playing gay roles. I do think that the best person for the role should always get it. But I also happen to believe that about 99.9% of the time, a gay person is the best person to play a gay role, because there is an authenticity that is really easily recognizable to especially other gay people when watching gay people on roles. I think the only straight actor I know who pulls it off somewhat convincingly is Darren Criss, and he's retired from playing gay roles now. So there is only now gay men to play them roles. And the thing is in casting in this movie, we did audition straight guys. We did. But there's a shorthand that comes in, you know, casting queer people in queer roles, that it was just like asking straight guys to understand the nuances and the layers of what was going on in this movie was a really tall order. And every gay person that we brought in practically really understood it on a really visceral level. And it was just like very clear. I mean, it's illegal for us to ask who's gay and who's not, you know, but like we could tell.
Yeah. And I mean, watching anything, I think it's especially apparent when you see people kissing on screen. I think, I don't know. At least that's how I feel. I mean, everyone has sort of a different opinion on it, but I just think it's obvious when you're watching a straight person play gay and they're trying to kiss, there's, I don't know. Not always. I think there are people in the past who have done it well. This is sort of a bigger picture too, and this might be more too serious of a topic for us to chat about, but I'm curious where you stand, because there's this kind of, Fire Island is so wonderful, joyous, happy, very funny, but there's this kind of idea lately that I've been seeing a lot pop up within the LGBTQ community of like, we've already told our traumatic stories and now we want to see more joyous things. And I sort of find myself somewhere in the middle. I don't think we should ignore those traumatic stories. I think those are also still important to tell. And I worry that this idea of like not having LGBTQ dramas portrayed on screen might cause us to lose some of the history of the LGBTQ community.
I think it's a balance thing, right? You know, like, I think it's just, I think it's been a little imbalanced for a long time. I think that especially for mainstream studio movies, produced and oftentimes written and directed by straight people, like they find I think straight people, straight creators oftentimes are way more interested in our trauma than they are in our joy. And so I totally agree with you. I think that there is a place and there is a need to continue to tell those stories. But I just think that like there needs to be a balance, you know, like straight people get the full gamut and it doesn't always feel like we do. And, you know, like I really just, for me, I wanted to tell a story where everyone really liked being gay, and that one, you know, like no one in this movie is struggling with their homosexuality. Like they've all been out and they all like it. And no one is, you know, like wishing they could be straight in this movie. And that was really important for me to portray.
I just loved it. I'm a huge rom-com junkie too. So there's so many of those elements in there. And it's just, I really can't explain the joy I felt watching it. And I know everyone, I'm so excited for everyone to get to watch, because it was just a beautiful movie. Talk to me about Housewives. You mentioned Jersey Housewives. You want to talk about Jersey reunion. Tell me your thoughts. Go for it.
What a mess. Teresa, I think that like, You know, there's this interesting trend that I'm seeing in Bravo world right now where people are sort of coming around to this idea that, like, maybe Melissa was the master manipulator that Teresa has been saying she is. You know, I know the girls over at our favorite bitch sesh, you know, are sort of on that train because of various reasons. But watching Teresa sort of twist herself into knots to justify not having Melissa in the wedding was really rough to watch. Like,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
I get it. And the thing is, I understand where she's coming from, where it's like, okay, we're not close. But like, also, Melissa's right. If Melissa got married and Teresa wasn't in the wedding, it would have been...
Oh, it would have been World War III.
Yeah, it would have been forgiven for that. And it is the hypocrisy that is sort of insane about Teresa, where she expects all this loyalty, but gives absolutely no loyalty to her brother. And it's really, really hard to watch that play out. And you can tell that it really does, like, I'm less like, I don't know necessarily how hurt Melissa is by it. I think she identifies it and pinpoints it. I don't know how, like, viscerally hurt she is, but you can tell that it really does bother Joe. And like, that's sad to me, because I really do like him. I think he's in the pantheon of great house husbands. And
I'm very attracted to Joe Gorka.
Oh, yeah,
and I know absolutely. That I should, you know, he's very attractive. I, you know, there's all this hidden stuff though, that's behind the scenes. Like, even on just devil's advocate, I also think, like, what Melissa is really upset about, I think it's maybe 10% that she knows this is tearing up her brother and sister, her husband and his sister. But I also think, like, she's in her mind thinking, oh, I'm not going to be in the wedding special, you know,
yeah,
like, it's like, no. I'm not going to be.
But I mean, I have to say, and this is really sad, Melissa has nothing else if she's not in conflict with Teresa.
Totally.
She has nothing else. And we've seen that play out over the last two seasons where they've been in relative peace with each other. She has no story if she's not in conflict with Melissa. And so this is kind of the best case scenario for her. Not getting in the wedding really is sort of like, it gives her beef to go into next season.
Oh, that's
and
interesting.
It gives her a platform. Yeah. So now she doesn't have to make up shit about her fucking marriage next season. Yeah. She can just fight with Teresa, which is what we all want to see.
And I'm tired of all of us pretending that they don't hate each other. Like they just don't even, I think from the get go, they haven't liked each other. And we went like a couple seasons or two or three seasons now where it's been like, oh yeah, we're friends. And it's like, you're not friends. Like, you hate each other.
It's very clear. And what I'm interested to see the development of is, it really seems like Dolores and Teresa, there's a sort of a fracture there in that friendship. For her to not get invited to the engagement party because she quote unquote isn't in a couple, and she is, like, it's,
you know what I heard? Really, wait, you know crazy. What I heard just today, Joel? That apparently, and this could be wrong, people were DMing it to me though, but Dina, I guess, threw the engagement party, Dina Manzo, because Dina and Teresa are really close. And Dina and Dolores hate each other. And it's something to do with like the Caroline Dina relationship. But so I think that plays it, that there's something there. And I haven't gotten to the bottom of it yet. I'm just,
Dina is always hanging around sort of the periphery of all of these little dramas in some shape or form, especially with Teresa. I think that relationship always is like a specter that haunts this show.
What do you want for the cast next season? Do you want the same cast back? Do you want to get rid of some people? What are we thinking?
Well, we certainly don't need Tracy back.
No,
what a big bag of fucking
big old flop. Yeah,
big old flop. She just brought nothing. And I think, like, it didn't even really help Marge at all to have an extra ally, because she was so nothing. It actually probably deducted points from Marge's tally by the end. I think I really like this cast. I think that there is probably room for one more, maybe. The relationships and the alliances are starting to feel a little stale. Like, it's a little bit like I was actually really excited when Jennifer and Marge sort of made up and started to finally become real friends. It looks like that sort of dissolved a little bit by this reunion. Jennifer is like clearly back in Teresa's pocket in a big way.
Yeah.
The only one that I think is maybe sort of on her way out, and it's sad because I do think her story was a little compelling this season, was Jackie. Not necessarily bringing, I don't know what's next, what she has left to give, you know, like
they're saying
in terms
she's
of
demoted
with the ladies.
I've been hearing that she's been demoted to just a friend. So like not a main cast member, but yeah, I loved her storyline this season, but yeah, I don't know that you mentioned the Jen and Margaret of it all. And I also think it was so interesting in part one of the reunion was the Dolores and Jen thing that was coming. It was like, I don't know.
And Therese's, and that's really going to be the first time in a long time that Therese is going to be put in a corner of making a decision, because like she is all about loyalty and she's all about, you know, friend loyalty. And it's like, who's she going to be loyal? And like Dolores, I think, is the one that's going to make her make that call. And I actually think that Dolores, that Therese is going to choose Jen.
I would love to see Dina come in there, because that would screw up all those dynamics so much.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's so funny because Dina came back on such a bad season that like we didn't really get to see Dina in action.
Right.
But I think that like if that's maybe what I want to see, is swap out Jackie and Dina and see how messy it actually gets.
We got to take a quick break here. We'll be back with more from Joel Kim Booster. I want to thank Acast for all episodes of Everything Iconic. You go to acast.com/everythingiconic and we'll be right back. Ah, I love that sound, don't you? And that's the sound you're going to hear when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell, online, in person, on social media, and beyond. We use it here at Everything Iconic. Shopify is the best all-in-one commerce platform capable of handling all your business complexity, no matter how big you grow. I think it's fantastic. You're probably thinking, sure, but migrating is going to be a headache, but Shopify's app store has the migration apps you need to migrate all of your products, your orders, your customers, and more from every major e-commerce platform all the way to Shopify. And I always hate when I'm shopping online and I have to re-enter all of my information. Well, Shopify store remembers your shipping address, your payment information. So if you're on the couch and your wallet's on the kitchen counter, you don't have to get up, which is nice. So sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/everythingiconic, all lowercase. That's 1 month for just $1 at shopify.com/everythingiconic. Shopify, shopify.com/everythingiconic. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. And we all carry around different stressors, both big and small. Sometimes the small stressors are the worst for me because I cannot stop thinking about them when I'm trying to sleep or when I'm trying to go about my day. I keep those little things bottled up and it can start to affect me negatively. Now, therapy is a safe space to get those things off of my chest and figure out how to work through all that stuff. And if you've never benefited from therapy, I think it's time you explore. I think anyone can be helped by going to a professional therapist. It's so incredibly helpful to get those coping skills and deal with those stressors. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be super convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you got to do is fill out this quick, brief questionnaire and you get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, which I think is so important. So that way you find someone that you work well with. Now get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/everythingiconic today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/everythingiconic.
Joel, you're a Salt Lake City fan, right?
Oh, yeah.
I believe I saw this on your Twitter. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you're a big Mary fan, correct?
Mary fan is maybe not how I would put it. I think that Mary is one of the most evil housewives to her core that the franchise as a whole has ever seen. And I think that she is maybe one of the only housewives that has... could and maybe has committed murder in her past. I think she's dangerous. I think that she is that in some senses keeping her on television is irresponsible. And yet I think she is one of the most important things in that show, and that she needs to be brought back season after season until we see her arrested on screen in a similar fashion as Jen Shah. I just don't see any way around it. In a season where a woman is literally arrested by the feds for defrauding old people, Mary still somehow is the bigger villain in that season and more interesting in that season. Like, that's a feat. That's a huge feat.
I still don't know that we've all fully unpacked season two of Salt Lake City Housewives. Like, I really think like we'll go back in a few years and be like, what the fuck was that? Like, there was a lot of crazy shit happening and it's all there on screen. And I just don't know that it was really appreciated for how good it was and also how crazy and fucked up it was.
No, I mean, we've... The things that happened in that van, time after time. I mean, it deserves its own like documentary. Like, get that van driver on the horn.
Right.
Like,
right.
Whoever gets that interview is like is the real winner.
Kevin, the driver.
Like, yeah, ecosystem of Real Housewives news. Like, it's just it seems huge. And my worry is, I do not think that Jen Shah understands the gravity of her situation just based purely on her social media presence right now. Like, I really worry that she is not being counseled well, because she's gonna go to prison for a long time.
Well, I get confused how all these women are being counseled. And I have met people who have worked social media for some of these women. And it is shocking, especially when you bring in the larger, the crimes and the courts, and you bring in these outside forces that are very real, intense, serious issues that they're dealing with. And I wonder who's counseling Erica Jane's social media. Oh, why are they, why isn't anyone stepping in? I don't know,
but man, she is really losing the image war, by all accounts.
Wait, so talk to me about Erica Jane. Do you watch Beverly Hills, right?
Oh, yeah. Big fan of Beverly Hills. Very excited to see what happens this season. Really promising, I think, development for Crystal is Crystal v. Erica. I'm actually, like, I hope that is actually a thing, because what I need to see more from Crystal Kung Minkoff is more, tell me you're that girl. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I need, like, as much as we all fell in love with Sutton, and as much as the I was violated played out too long for, I think it was a miscalculation on Crystal's part, that beginning arc of the season, she was so strong and she had showed such promise. Like, the way she stared down Sutton on that boat while she was rolling her face and just kept saying no was so magnificent. And yet, and then it just didn't, it sort of fizzled out. I think she was trying to do the calculus in her head, mm-hmm. and trying to stay ahead of what the audience reaction would be. And it was only after the show aired that she realized she bet on the wrong horses.
Yeah. And you're totally right. Yeah. I think she leaned in a little too hard with that violation thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was her first season, right? Was it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was her first. So I think, you know, she was finding her footing, but yeah, I think like the star quality is all there. I think.
Yeah,
gorgeous. We've only scratched the surface of like how good Crystal could be as a housewife.
For sure. And I think, like, you know, probably, you know, certainly it sucks that they keep throwing these Asian women on these casts. And when what we really need and what we really deserve, reboot the OC with an all Asian cast. Because you want to know where rich Asian women live? It's the fucking OC, you know, right. Like. And oh God, watching the saddest 2-part reunion.
The saddest, Joel.
I mean, nothing. Just absolute nothing.
Dr. Jen was fucking asleep the whole 2 parts. Yeah, like, she didn't say 2 words. And, you know, I was watching the Jersey right after Orange County. Like, the Jersey women were just so much more awake on camera. You know, when you get on camera, you do have to kind of perk it up a little bit. Yep. And I was watching the Orange County women. I'm like, sort of Heather, she knows how to kind of perk up on camera.
Shannon has never looked better.
Shannon looked stunning at the reunion.
She looked
amazing
in that pink dress. Never looked better.
But when you look at like Emily and everyone's just sort of sleepy. And I'm like, even wake crazy. Up.
What's her?
Noella.
Noella, who I think like was probably very necessary to that season. Like, even she really did not bring even any of her crazy from the rest of the season to the reunion. It felt very restrained in a big way. And like, yeah, that franchise needs serious help. And I don't think Tamara's the answer. I know a lot of people are clamoring for Tamara, and I get it. And I would prefer Tamara over nothing, but I really do think we need to let go of the franchise and move on, or reboot it completely or something.
I would love a recast. I mean, I think to me that makes the most sense, but I don't know that they would do that, but it makes the most sense to like, let's start fresh with a new group of women.
Yeah.
That we
or
can
go to
cast
San Francisco. Give us the Asian women of Silicon Valley. Like, they're like, that is, I think the problem is we keep putting these Asian women on these casts of all, you know, ex women. And it's just, it's putting a lot of pressure on them, I think, representationally. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's, you know, poor Tiffany Moon, you know, she could have been somebody, but just saddled with a terrible cast.
Yeah. She was really, I felt bad for Tiffany, and that whole season was a mess. I mean, I'm glad they just sort of canceled it, but it is frustrating. And I know a lot of people are saying, oh, we need like a Married to Medicine Dallas, because Tiffany, I think, could be a great reality star, but it's like, man, she got the shaft. Joel, okay. Any other housewife thoughts you need to get out right now while we're here? Any other Bravo?
I'm excited for Dubai. I'm really, you know, excited to see the wider audience be introduced to Caroline Stanberry. I think that's going to be really exciting television. I'm not completely sold on the splitting of New York yet. I think that it needs to be, I think what would have been a smarter decision would be to just do Real Housewives of Brooklyn and then Real Housewives of Manhattan, you know, like, I think like, rather than try and do this, like, young versus old, like, it doesn't make any sense. And I like certainly don't want to see the old ladies like sequestered on Peacock Island, you know, like, right. I just want, like, just do two separate shows. Like, the city is big enough. Brooklyn and Manhattan are two big enough boroughs. Like, those women hardly ever leave the Upper East Side anyways, you know, like, Leah, the fact that it was like sort of a thing that Leah was a downtown girl was so shocking to me as someone who lived in New York for 5.5 years. Like, it just, like, that's where the vibrancy of New York is happening, is like, you know, downtown. So it was crazy to me that that was ever a thing.
And splitting it that way, there could be such an opportunity for a crossover episode or something where it's like, you know,
oh, if only Alex McCord still lived in Brooklyn.
I know. It's really upsetting. I think Andy was just saying in an interview I was reading, he's like, you know, we all wish we could get Alex back, but she's in Australia. Joel, talk to me. Fire Island, making something for the queer community. I find that I hope people don't yell at me for saying this, but I feel like oftentimes the LGBTQ community can be the most critical of LGBTQ creators. How are you feeling now that you have this amazing movie for that is such a, I think, love letter to the queer community?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I love being gay. And I hope that shows in the movie. I think that we are really hard on stuff that is meant for us. I think that in part is because of scarcity. I think that we just don't get enough of it. And so that when something finally does come along, it is forced to be sort of, it has to be everything for everyone. And our community is quite diverse, you know, and I think that it's unfair to expect anything to be everything. And, you know, I get a lot of questions mainly from straight, you know, outlets of like, how does this represent the universal gay experience? And it's like, it doesn't, and it's not supposed to. It represents a very specific experience shared by Bowen and I on that island. And it is about our friendship. And so much of it is cannibalized from our friendship. And if people happen to see themselves reflected in that, then I'm so overjoyed and I'm glad that they found that. But if you don't, my real hope is that, you know, this creates a million clones. Like I'm so glad that Billy's movie is coming out this year too. Not only because like
Billy Eichner's
Bros.
Yeah. It's called,
in September. Yeah. Because like, you know, at least there's two now, you know, like if they don't like my movie, hopefully they'll like Billy's. And if they don't like Billy's, then hopefully they'll make their own, you know? And like, I don't say that flippantly. I mean that genuinely, is that like, I hope this inspires people and opens up the possibilities of what people think that they can accomplish in this industry is, you know, that there's room for a breadth of experiences to be told on screen. And, I know I'm on gay Twitter. I know how mean we can be, and I understand and I see the criticism, and you know, the trailer dropping was a really scary day for me, but I if you had criticisms in the trailer, I will say about 90% of them that I saw online, I was like, "Oh, this is addressed in the movie." You know, like, I think like when people are like, "Oh, we're supposed to believe that Joel Kim Booster is bullied on Fire Island." I was like, "Yeah, no, actually that I fully address that in the movie, as the plot, you know, it's a thing." So I think that like, I just hope that people give it a chance, and, you know, I'll accept all of the funny, you know, jokes on gay Twitter about it. I've done my share of that as well. I remember when Looking came out, you know, so I accept it and I honor all of those responses, but I hope that people do give the movie a fair shot too.
Once they see it, people are going to love it. I mean, it's so good, but you know, there's this weird thing that I almost think is ingrained in the gay community where, even outside of the industry, oftentimes there's one or two spots for a gay person in a leadership position or in any industry, when you look at the top, there are a handful of straight white men, and then there's, you know, some women, and then it's like the one gay person or whatever. So it's almost like it's ingrained in people to want to tear each other down. And I hope going forward, we can all kind of lift each other up and know that there's tons of room at the top for everyone, and to tell all of these types of stories when it comes to the film industry.
Yeah. I mean, that was a really conscious thing that, like, Bone and I have been friends for almost a decade now. And like, I remember we talked about this really, really early, because like conventional wisdom says that Bone and I check a lot of the same demographic boxes, you know, and like, there's a lot of ways that I think the industry would love to pit us against each other because of that. And like, say that there's only room for one of us. And I think like, we made a really conscious decision to say like, fuck that. We're not going to play that game with each other. And we're just going to support each other. And that's a huge reason why I wrote this movie, is that, you know, I didn't see a world right now where Bone and I got to co-lead a movie created by somebody else. So I said, fuck it, I'll do it myself. And like, I think that that is like a huge issue, and a huge part of why I was so excited to get this movie made is to just prove that like, it doesn't have to be like, oh, we climbed to the top of the ladder and then we pull the ladder up behind us and like block anybody else from making it. Cause that's not, you know, it's not how white guys do it. It is also frustrating that like a straight white guy makes a movie and people watch the trailer and say that's not for me. And then they sort of move on. But I think with gay entertainment, it's like, oh, that's not for me. And everyone's telling me that it is supposed to be for me. And that makes me mad, you know, and that makes me resent it even harder. And so I'm going to, you know, make it my mission to spend a week tweeting about it, you know, and dragging it for whatever reason. And so I just hope that this breeds, a million clones, and that there are too many gay movies for people to focus on any one, that kind of attention.
I love decorating the house and getting furniture, but sometimes it could be overwhelming to design a space. And so luckily I'm here to tell you about a company called Cozy. Now Cozy is fantastic, a North American company that thoughtfully designs furniture made for modern living. Now Cozy strives to provide the best furniture shopping experience with elegant, super high quality products, plus fast delivery and easy assembly, which is really important to me because I do not like putting together furniture. So the easier, the better for me. Now Cozy offers beautiful, customizable sofas and sectionals that are made to adapt in time. This means customers can add seats to the sofas over time. Maybe if you're extending your family, you might want more space on the couch. Cozy also offers a great range of coffee tables, washable rugs, wall shelving, credenzas, TV stands, and accessories. So much. It's thoughtfully designed furniture made for modern living. There's an outdoor sofa and tables collection that is fantastic. It's called the Mistral. So you can choose the perfect sofa configuration for your outdoor setup. Cozy also opened its first retail space on Queen Street in Toronto to push the experience to the next level and allow customers to engage physically with the products. So transform your living space today with Cozy. Visit cozy.com, spelled C-O-Z-E-Y, to start customizing your furniture today. Again, that's Cozy, C-O-Z-E-Y.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I know I have to let you go. I do want you to tell us about the special on Netflix. When is the special out?
Yeah, my Netflix special, my first full hour of stand-up on Netflix premieres on June 21st. It's called Psychosexual. And then I also have, I'm on an Apple show with Maya Rudolph that comes out on June 24th called Loot. That is very, very fun. And MJ Rodriguez also stars, and she's, such a fucking star that I can't wait for people to see it.
I'm so excited. Well, I have to thank you. I mean, I love Fire Island, and I've always been such a huge fan of your work. So I'm just, I'm so grateful for you sharing it. And I ask all of my guests these next two questions. Your favorite Mariah Carey song, and if you were choosing People Magazine Sexiest Man Alive, who would you choose?
My favorite Mariah Carey song, it's kind of basic, but it's Always Be My Baby. I think classic. It never gets old. It's a classic for a reason. And my Time Sexiest Man of the Year. I'm just going to have to do a small plug for the movie, and it's Conrad Riccamora. Like, I think it is a huge indictment on this industry that Conrad Riccamora has not played a leading man in this capacity before my movie. I think he's so sexy. It was so easy to fall in love with him every day on set. And I cannot wait for people to get all kinds of boners for him watching him in this movie.
We love a boner here at Everything Iconic. Joel, I love you. Thank you so much for taking the time to stop by. Everyone check out Fire Island on Hulu and Joel's Netflix special as well. Look out for his new Apple Plus show. Joel, thank you so much.
Thank you.